Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Yes, remake the world. That's what we want to do. We want to remake the world. We want to remake the world for our own circumstance and situation. That's why we want to remake the world. But we're living at a time, brothers and sisters, where the world is actually being remade. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. My name is William Kareem, and I'd like to welcome you to Living in the Upload Life. This is Monday morning programming on American Muslim 360. And as such, we're going to start off with the introduction to Living in the Upload Life.
What the technology winded up doing, especially I'm talking about the technology winded up separating the generations. That's what they did. So why is this important? It's just important that Muslims understand the way that the technology worked and the way that the technology advanced from what was going on in the pioneer generation to what's going on in the social media generation. We call it the social media generation because the advancements that happened in the social media generation winded up attracting the children.
I believe the children are the future.
Yes, attracting the children. And ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, pioneers of all ages, today we're going to, I'm forced to tell you that the technology is changing again. Yes, the technology is changing again, which means that the future is going to be changing the way that things are being done. And I have a clip that I want to play for you, but before I play that clip, it's important, again, the purpose of living in the upload life is just to keep you informed about what's going on as far as the technology is concerned. We were talking about the social media generation, and the social media generation came about because of the internet generation, okay? The internet generation where what was produced was computers and the World Wide Web, and these two things came together. All right, so I have something to play for you. I hope that you're going to be able to hear it. This here is In the Age of AI, because that is the new advancement that is basically coming into, you know, our lives.
China has decided to chase the AI future. A future made and embraced by a new generation.
Again, China has decided to chase the AI generation, a new age generation, you know, for young people.
Not to deal with because of immense energy and also the obvious fact of the demographics. They're mostly very younger people. So this clearly is technology which is being generated by a whole new generation.
Did you hear that? It's technology that's being generated by a whole new generation.
Orville Schell is one of America's foremost China stars. He first came here 45 years ago.
When I first came here in 1975, the Chairman Mao was still alive. The Cultural Revolution was coming on. And there wasn't a single whiff of anything of what you see. It was unimaginable. In fact, in those years, one very much thought, this is the way China is. This is the way it's going to be.
Okay, there you go. So there was a cultural revolution that happened in China. I know a little bit about it because I actually studied China at the university. It was very interesting. Now, it's important to know that China is not much larger than the United States. Okay, when we look at that area, we think that China is this really, really big place. But as far as land mass is concerned, China is not that much larger than the United States. The other point to know about China is this, that China has 1.433 billion people. That's almost 1.5 billion people that are living in China, as opposed to the United States, which has 333 billion people living in the United States. So China basically has three times the population of the United States. That's very important for us to remember. Three times the population as we continue.
And the fact that it has gone through so many different changes since is quite a story.
Yeah, since the Chinese Revolution, the Revolution of China, what winded up happening is there was a infiltration in China that happened, and you probably know about this here, where foreign companies and foreign culture was coming into China, and the people of China was embracing these cultures that were outside, and most of them were European cultures that were coming in and making changes to China, taking advantage of Chinese resources and Chinese influencing Chinese people. And what happened is that Mao Zedong, you know, he saw it and
he basically rebelled. You know, it was the same thing that happened with Hitler. Hitler saw that, you know, something was happening as far as Jewish people was concerned and that they were taking over the country. And so, you know, like he got the young people involved and they rebelled and did what they did as far as Hitler was concerned. But China, what China did, China, they winded up getting the young people involved, and the young people were the ones that started the revolution. And when they started the revolution, they started to basically kick the culture out. So they were basically saying, if you, and it's not the first time in history, if you are embracing European culture, then you're not being Chinese. That's not the first time that has happened in European world history. It also happened in world history when the Muslims came into Spain and people started to embrace Muslim culture. And the Christian religion, they saw that people started to embrace the culture of the Moors, the cultures of Islam, and they rebelled against that, and that's when they wound up kicking out, you know, the Moors wound up kicking the Muslims out of Spain, and they went and took their Christian culture back. So the same thing happened with the Chinese Revolution. The Chinese Revolution was interested in throwing off the European influence and coming back to their Chinese culture. And in doing that, it was really brutal. And so they basically, you know, tore everything down. Everybody had to dress the same way. You could only have one baby. It's just a whole lot of changes. But they basically tore everything down from scratch and said that everybody had to conform to this new, to this old idea of Chinese tradition. That's what they said. And so when you hear about the Muslims in China, you know, being represented and you being abused and things, what's really happening is China does not want the Islamic influence to overtake the Chinese culture. They don't want that. And so what they wound up doing, they wound up going around to the mosque and they wound up, you know, tearing out everything that had a whole bunch of Arabic on it, you know, and replacing it. It had to be with Chinese writing, not with Arabic writing. And it had to do with the way that you dress. You couldn't dress like some kind of Muslim. You had to dress like you were Chinese. And so they had these induction camps that they did in China, you know, that would conform, that forced the people to conform. And, you know, if you want to stay in the country and you have to conform. Basically, that's what China has done as far as outside cultures is concerned. They don't want that. They want everything to be Chinese culture. Okay, so we're going to continue.
This extraordinary progress goes back to that game of Go.
I think that the government recognized that this was a sort of critical thing for the future, and we need to catch up with this, that, you know, we cannot have a foreign company showing us up at our own game, and this is going to be something that's going to be critically important in the future. So, you know, we called it the Sputnik moment for the Chinese government. The Chinese government kind of woke up.
As we often say in China, the beginning is the most difficult part.
In 2017, Xi Jinping announced the government's bold new plans to an audience of foreign diplomats. China would catch up with the U.S. in artificial intelligence by 2025 and lead the world by 2030.
Now, this is the change that's going on as far as technology into the future. And it's a big change, brothers and sisters. It's not a small change. It's a big change. So much so that the machinery of the future is going to be totally
run by artificial intelligence. Now, the computer that you have today, the computer that you have, it is run just basically by the internet. And in order for you to actually participate in artificial intelligence, you have to actually go online and participate with something that is dealing with artificial intelligence. But the machines of the future are going to automatically be adapted to artificial intelligence. So this is where this big change is basically coming through, and this is what our children, with your children, our grandchildren, are going to have to deal with.
Intensified cooperation in frontier areas such as digital economy, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, and quantum computing.
Today, China leads the world in e-commerce.
You got that? Today, China leads the world in e-commerce. They have all kinds of machines and robots that actually are delivering commerce to people, not only in China, but all over the world. And they started this back in early 2000s, I remember this being the situation, that each state in China, each state in China had its own manufacturing plants, and they would manufacture goods, and then they would send those goods, you know, around the world. That's when you had Alibaba and other shippers, Amazon, et cetera, that would go there and have China make things, and then China would, you know, sell them all over the world. First China started just, you know, with companies. I'll give you an example. Nike and Michael Jordan. Nike was making Air Jordan sneakers in China for about $5. And that's, $5 for each pair of sneakers. But they would bring them over here to America and sell them for $100. So you see the profit that's involved in that? So the Nike company would say, well, listen, we want to order 100,000 sneakers, pairs of sneakers, and we'll give you $5 for each pair. We'll give you $5 for each pair of sneakers. So this was when it started beginning about, you know, e-commerce and technology. You know, they were capable. China was capable of making it. Of course, as you know, you remember, you say, well, made in China, made in China. So they were able to, the United States companies were able to get the product made cheaply and then bring it over here to America and sell it at a astronomical, astronomical profits. That's what they did. And that continues today. That actually continues today. It's a little easier, though, and the price margin is different because there's just so much that you can buy from China. And that's why it said that China leads in e-commerce today. And it had everything to do with each one of the states in China, you know, beginning their manufacturing of various goods and being able to ship them around. There's something else that I'll tell you a little later on. Time just flies, but here we go.
Drones delivered to rural villages. At a society that bypassed credit cards, now shops in stores without cashiers, where the currency is facial recognition.
No country has ever moved that fast. And in the short 2.5 years, China's AI implementation really went from minimal amount to probably about 17 or 18 unicorns
that is billion-dollar companies.
Yeah. So the new word for the day, brothers and sisters, is unicorns. It is a word that will definitely find itself into the culture and the word atmosphere. A unicorn is a company that does at least $1 billion worth of product.
AI today, and that progress is hard to believe.
The progress was powered by a new generation of ambitious young techs pouring out of Chinese universities, competing with each other for new ideas, and financed by a new cadre of Chinese venture capitalists.
Now, you see where this is going. Here it is. The question becomes, what are our universities producing for our children? What are our schools producing for our children? As opposed to they're telling you in China what they're doing. It says ambitious students coming out of universities are competing with each other for new ideas financed by a cadre of venture capitalists. Now, three examples. Think about the ideas that are happening in our universities and what's being produced out of our universities. Do I really have to tell you? It's more of a social experiment, social transformations, as opposed to these ideas of competing with each other about new ideas. The new ideas that they're dealing with are social ideas coming from our universities. In Russia was competing by concentrating on the internet to spy, to create the dark web. That's what Russia was doing, creating the dark web at that time. China was more on top of the board, and what they did is they made their students tenacious, to be very fast, and to, what did it say, winner take all, right? So they develop an attitude in their students to be tenacious. What does tenacious mean? It means being persistent in maintaining, adhering, or seeking something that's desired. Not easily to pull apart, cohesive, tending to adhere or cling to another substance. Tenacious, to be tenacious, to hang in there, to not quit. This is the type of students that China is developing. And they came out and they were put into offices to compete with each other with a computer for new ideas. And they had venture capitalists that would back them, that would back these new ideas that they were coming up with. And that's why they started talking about this whole idea about unicorns.
This is Sinovation, created by U.S.-educated AI scientist and businessman Kai Fu Lee.
Well, these unicorns, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the general AI area. A unicorn means $1 billion company, a company whose valuation or market capitalization is at $1 billion or higher. I think we put two unicorns to show $5 billion or higher.
Kai Fu Lee was born in Taiwan. His parents sent him to high school in Tennessee.
Okay, so then we're going to move forward because there are two things that with Kai Fu Lee, what he did is he developed speech recognition. So you know, as far as speech recognition, you know what happens with that. But there was something else that happened.
And access to all that data means that the deep learning algorithm...
Wait a minute.
Life in China is largely conducted on smartphones. A billion people use WeChat, the equivalent of Facebook, Messenger, and PayPal, and much more combined into just one super app. And there are many more.
China is the best place for AI implementation today because the vast amount of data that's available in China. China has a lot more users than any other country, 3 to 4 times more than the U.S.
Again, China has 1.433 billion people as opposed to the United States having 330 billion people. So China has 3 times as many people in their country.
There are 50 times more mobile payments than the U.S. There are 10 times more food deliveries, which serve as data to learn more about user behavior than the U.S. 300 times more shared bicycle rides. And each shared bicycle ride has all kinds of sensors submitting data up to the cloud. Now, we're talking about maybe 10 times more data than the U.S. And AI is basically run on data and fueled by data. The more data, the better the AI works. More importantly than how brilliant the researcher is working on the problem. So in the age of AI, where data is the new oil, China is the new Saudi Arabia.
Okay, you got that? Okay, so data, this is where data becomes important. Remember, AI stands for what? What does it stand for? Artificial intelligence. That's what it, which is data. So he just said data is to artificial intelligence as oil is to Saudi Arabia. That's basically what he said. Let me see. I think we should come go back and hear that.
Life in China is largely conducted on smartphones. A billion people use WeChat, the equivalent of Facebook, Messenger, and PayPal, and much more combined into just one super app. And there are many more.
China is the best place for AI implementation today because the vast amount of data that's available in China. China has a lot more users than any other country, 3 to 4 times more than the U.S. There are 50 times more mobile payments than the U.S. There are 10 times more food deliveries, which serve as data to learn more about user behavior than the U.S. 300 times more shared bicycle rides. And each shared bicycle ride has all kinds of sensors submitting data up to the cloud. Now, we're talking about maybe 10 times more data than the U.S. And AI is basically run on data and fueled by data. The more data, the better the AI works. More importantly than how brilliant the researcher is working on the problem. So in the age of AI, where data is the new oil, China is the new Saudi Arabia.
So China's the new Saudi Arabia because China has more data, more artificial intelligence. They are collecting more. Why? Because they have more people. They have 433 billion people that they can collect data from as opposed to 333 billion people in the United States. So and the people of China participate in using smartphones and things like that. It's not like, you know, like whoa, you better watch out. They're looking at me. Now, you don't have that in China. You know, and the way that they got like that, remember, is because of the Chinese Revolution. That's how they got like that. They're not suspicious of each other. They cooperate with each other. If the technology is being used by China, the government of China, the people of China, the businessmen of China, the students of China are using it. So they trust each other as far as the data is concerned.
And access to all that data means that the deep learning algorithm can quickly predict behavior, like the creditworthiness of someone wanting a short-term loan.
Here is our application, and customer can choose how many money they want to borrow. and how long they want to borrow, and they can input their data here. And after that, you can just borrow very quickly.
The CEO shows us how quickly you can get a loan.
It has done.
It takes an average of 8 seconds.
It has passed to banks. Well, yeah, our job is finished.
In the 8 seconds, the algorithm has assessed 5,000 personal features from all your data.
5,000 features. That is related with the delinquency. When maybe the banks only use maybe 10 features when they are doing their risk management.
Processing millions of transactions, it'll dig up features that would never be apparent to a human loan officer, like how confidently you typed your loan application, or, surprisingly, if you keep your cell phone battery charged.
It's very interesting. The battery of the phone is related with their delinquency rate. Someone who has much more lower battery, they get much more dangerous than others.
It's probably unfathomable to an American how a country can dramatically evolve itself from a copycat laggard to all of a sudden to nearly as good as the U.S. in technology.
Really? Really? When you understand what China had to go through, they basically tore everything down and started from scratch. That's what they did. They tore everything down. They got rid of all of that foreign influence. All of that foreign influence, they got rid of it. And they started, they basically, how would you say, they did something to their people where they made their people, everybody, go to from scratch. You got, this is the way you have to dress. This is the way you have to talk. This is the way that you have to eat. That's what they did with everybody in the country, with all the Chinese people. So they tore the individual. They tore them down to scratch. And then they started to build up from there. And it was dedication to China, dedication to Mao Zedong, dedication to being Chinese. That's what they made each other, that's what China made their citizens embrace. And then after they embraced that, then they sent them to schools and universities and told them that, you know, like, yo, you have to be tenacious, okay? You have to stick with it. You have to be very fast. You can't be slow about it. You have to be very fast, quick thinking, fast moving, and clean right down to the modern times. And winner take all. And this is the competition that they had against each other. And that's what competition is, winner take all. When you when you talk about United States going to the Olympics, and why did the United States basketball team go there? They went there to be tenacious, to be very fast, and winner take all. That's what competition is. Winner take all. And which human being is more capable in the United States that it shows, and that's setting world records in the United States? Black people. So that's where our tenaciousness comes in. But the question becomes, what are our schools producing? Are they producing our children that are going to these schools to be tenacious, to be very fast in what it is they're doing, and winner take all, this competitive, or are they doing social experimentation with them, talking about, you know, like, you got to call me by my pronoun. You know, I feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm a man inside. I feel like I'm a woman. They don't have that problem in China. That's not a problem. So these are some of the things that we really have to kind of look at, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's happening with us.
Like this facial recognition startup he invested in. Rigby was started by three young graduates in 2011.
Three young graduates started this facial recognition technology. You heard what it said. It said three young graduates that were utilizing being tenacious, being very fast, and winner take all. So you got speech recognition that was developed by a Chinese person, and you got facial recognition that's being generated by a Chinese person.
It's now a world leader in using AI to identify people.
It's pretty fast. For example, on the mobile device, we have timed the facial recognition speed. It's actually less than 100 milliseconds. So that's very, very fast. So 0.1 seconds that we can will be able to recognize, even on mobile device.
The company claims the system is better than any human at identifying people in its database. And for those who aren't, it can describe them, like our director, what he's wearing, and a good guess at his age, missing it by only a few months.
We are the first one to really take facial recognition to commercial quality.
That's why in Beijing today you can pay for your KFC with a smile.
You know, it's not so surprising. We've seen Chinese companies catching up to the U.S. in technology for a long time. And so if particular effort and attention is paid in a specific sector, it's not so surprising that they would surpass the rest of the world. And facial recognition is one of the first places we've seen that start to happen.
It's a technology prized by the government, like this program in Shenzhen to discourage jaywalking. Offenders are shamed in public, and with facial recognition, can be instantly fined. Critics warn that the government and some private companies have been building a national database from dozens of experimental social credit programs.
The government wants to integrate all these individual behaviors or corporations' records into some kind of a matrix and compute out a single number or set of number associated with an individual citizen, and using that to implement a incentive or punishment system.
A high social credit number can be rewarded with discounts on bus fares. A low number can lead to a travel ban. Some say it's very popular with the Chinese public that wants to punish bad behavior. Others see a future that rewards party loyalty and silences criticism.
Now, of course, they want to do that. See, that's okay in China. Why? Because it's all Chinese people don't mind having rules and regulations that are for all Chinese people. See, what they show us in the United States about Chinese gangsters and stuff like that, there, you can't think about it like that. China is cohesive. The Chinese population is cohesive. They all work together. If the government says that that's how it is, the people in China say, okay, that's how it is, then that's how it is. They don't have no rebellions and protests that go on like that in China. It's got to be real bad. And if they do, then, you know, like you'll really have something. But you know what they're doing? They're focusing and concentrating. They're focusing and concentrating on being ambitious. Coming out of school, you know, competing with each other for new ideas. And there's money that's being made because the ideas that they have, the ideas that they come up with are being financed by venture capitalists. And that's what we need. We need venture capitalists. But in order to get the venture capitalists, we got to come up with some new ideas, especially if we're talking about our community. We can't do the same old, same old. The world is moving quickly. The world is moving quickly. And if we are going to participate in it, then what we have to do is we have to be tenacious. We have to be very fast if we're going to participate in this technology. And we have to stick to it. We have to stick to it to make it happen. We just have to stick to it.
Right now, there is no final system being implemented. And from those experiments, we already see the possibility of what the social credit system can do to individuals. It's very powerful, William Light, and it's extremely troublesome in terms of civil liberty.
Every evening in China, ever-present cameras record the crowds as they surge down to the fund, the promenade along the banks of the Huangpu River. Once the great trading houses of Europe came here to do business with the Middle Kingdom. In the last century, they were all shut down by Mao's revolution. But now, in the age of AI, people come here to take in a spectacle that reflects China's remarkable progress. Illuminates the great political paradox of capitalism taking root in the communist state.
Capitalism taking place in a communist state. That's what's going on in China. They're still communist. They have a communist state, all right, run by the government. Government finances, schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what they have done is they've given the people an opportunity to participate in capitalism. And in doing so, they have become the lead in e-commerce. Because as I told you, you know, they gave their various states the opportunity to make things and to mail things off and to, you know, collect funds and make money. They started that off. The government still had their rules. They still had their rules, but they allowed, the government allowed their citizenry to compete with others. And not only compete with others as far as states is concerned like that, but to also compete with each other, which is big. And brothers and sisters, don't think that the United States is not following China's lead, because China's lead is showing that they're being very successful at it. So China is being successful as far as AI is concerned, and other people are going to have to get into it. They're going to have to. All right, so that being said, if anybody has a question or comment, you press 1 on your phone. We got 15 minutes left in the program. But the big message, the big message is that the technology is getting ready to advance to another level, especially as far as machinery is concerned, is getting ready to advance. But with that advancement, there are some things that we have to take into consideration. So I'm going to open the telephone line of 914-434. Assalamu alaikum. Your microphone is open. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Muhammad Sharif calling from Mount Vernon, New York. Assalamu alaikum, Brother William.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Muhammad.
I don't remember exactly how the commentary goes in the Quran or Prophet Muhammad's leadership. Says that we should go all the way to China and seek knowledge. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, you're right.
Now, evidently, we didn't do that. We haven't gone all the way to China. I think we had one or two people went to China to get some products. But as a community, we didn't go all the way to China. And that's one of the reasons why China got so far ahead of us in the Western world. And we see China, they are close to their cousins, I guess you could say, the Asians. look how far the Asians have gotten ahead of us, because we didn't go to China, we didn't go to the Asian and Muslim countries like, I can't think of country right now, Indonesia, Malaysia. Other people have gone to the Muslim countries to do business and everything. So we've fallen very far behind because we didn't follow instructions saying go all the way to China.
Well, we
everything
got
we pick
involved.
Up, everything we get, all utensils and coffee cups, and I mean everything you sent from made in China, made in China.
Yeah, there are other countries too. There are other countries that are getting involved too, as far as the manufacturing things. India and Indonesia and other countries are also getting involved. The question becomes,
right,
what is it that we are manufacturing? As you said, we have a couple of people that are actually bringing material from China here into the United States, a couple of Muslim companies that are doing that. But it needs to be more. It should it be more that we're going to take from China, or what is the idea of us as a community of people? How do we get our children and grandchildren involved in being tenacious and being very fast at what it is that they do, and not quitting on and creating ideas? You know, what are we doing as far as that's concerned, so that we are able to compete? Thank you, Muhammad.
You know, Yeti Mao spoke on that. He said the world sees us as spinners.
That's right.
Spinners. We get started jumping, everything gets started, but we can't be the marathon. We just spinners. Get
right.
started.
That's right.
Drop out.
That's right. That's right.
And even looking at our education system, think of how China and other places are producing education. I guess they say, why you keep speaking on? I'm saying it because here we are a whole community, and we got five or six four times education systems.
Schools. Yeah.
Imam told us, so we should be going, I mean, man, I'm saying, we should go from elementary to secondary to high school, and then we should be into producing a two-year college.
Colleges.
But we have got nowhere near that.
Yeah, we had the Muslim Teachers College, and I did participate in Muslim Teachers College down in Randolph, Virginia in 1993. And it shut down. Imam Qadir Abdul-Sabur, Abdul Karim, and others. And they had to bring in international scholars in order to, you know, keep the program going. Let me take this other telephone call, Muhammad. Hold on for a minute. 727-741. Right. Assalamu alaikum. Your microphone is open.
Alaikum. Assalam. Martha Naila calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. And greetings of peace
yes.
to both you and Muhammad and to the mm-hmm. other listeners. Yes, I wanted to mention India. You know, when you were mentioning about China shutting down everything and focusing on their what they were are about, and then India began a turmoil within they were trying to squeeze the Muslim community. Nothing like what China has done, but they began to represent the worshiping of the, I want to say the cow, whatever it is. But they were highlighting more so of what India history was about. But here in America, now here we are, and I believe in the midst of what we have been negligent on, now, as we focus, zoom in on what is being done to recapture, and as Muhammad was saying about the educational institution, recapture that. But the concentration has to be given to how to do that. And so I'm going to highlight CWSC promotion of the 50-year Human Family Strategic Planning and the strategic one strategy is every Saturday having the four areas connecting, reconnecting ourselves with ourselves, and at the same time, you know, inviting others as well, because it's all from a human perspective. But the challenge is to set our goals and strategies and stick to it, as you highlighted from China, regardless of what is going on. And that will keep us aligned with education, economics, governance, and social culture, so we don't get become an island. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. And to also understand, do you think that they have to pay a whole bunch of money to go to school in China to go ahead and develop, to be tenacious, to be quick thinking, fast moving, and not to quit? No, they go ahead, man. They have schools that develop their students, And even though we have Muslim schools, you know, many a times, you know, the question becomes, what are our public schools? What are our public schools actually doing as far as our children is concerned? They're more on a social idea. The social ideas, that's what's going on in our schools. And then our schools take that into the higher education. But what do we do as far as our children is concerned? How are we going to go ahead? How are we going to go ahead and get our children? I'm talking about Muslim children, to be tenacious, persistent in maintaining, adhering, or seeking something valued or desired. How are we going to do that? You know, because they're not. They're going to. If we send them to public school, they're going to public school for free. But in the process of going to public school for free, what are they really learning? Are they really learning to be persistent, to seek something and not to quit? 972-467, assalamu alaikum. Your microphone is open.
Well, I got my salam. It's my family, Dallas, Texas. Very, very intriguing program. And I think the main thing is that our idea of freedom, and that's our downfall. Our idea of freedom here is that we can do what we want to do, even if it's a detriment to our own country or a detriment to our own mind. In other countries, they try to give you freedom, but it's limited because they don't want the government won't allow certain things that they know is going to bring their country down, whether it's the individuals or the group. And I think places like China take advantage of that, especially like something like TikTok or these apps. They know that the U.S., we like to play games, so they created these apps that would show every, you know, show our monuments, show our streets, and they were able to gather data on that, you know, because they know Americans, they're gonna post pictures, they're going to do whatever they want to do. And that way they get our whole landscape, even something like TikTok.
Right.
Even like TikTok, over there you have to be 18 years old. Go ahead.
Yeah. And but the big difference is this, is that China is not, you know, they trust their people, so they don't mind giving their information. They don't mind going with voice recognition. They don't mind going with facial recognition because they're part of the Chinese culture. They're part of the Chinese government. So they don't mind the government.
Exactly.
Because there's not, because the government said, listen, this is what we're doing. It's for your own good. Look at what we're doing. We are getting ahead. So they're proving their point. So they're making it safe for Chinese people. That's what they're saying. But here in the United States, it winds up being different. Who are we giving the information to? Does China have information?
Right.
Spying on me. What the hell? I know we've had the conversation before about people being paranoid. What the hell? Somebody got a foot mute because you misplaced something in your house. All of a sudden, somebody came in your house and took what you misplaced. And,
right.
And it's like, well, who are you? Are you anybody?
Exactly. Because you got right. Are you former CIA or S? You know, you got all this valuable information. But like I said, I think the morals are different there also. That's why they don't mind, because I think for the most part, people want to do the right thing in a country like China for the most part. So they don't mind, you know.
Right. Because it's their people. If I harm you, you're my people. You're my people. I'm not here to harm you. We have to work together. You know, this is our country, and we're doing this for us. That's the kind of attitude, you know, that they have in China. We don't have that here. We got all these split personalities, you know. We got white people, we got black people, you know. We got Spanish people.
Yeah.
Inshallah, man, you know. So it's good that we at least come to understand what it is, man. And maybe we could do something
for it. That's why China pushes this on us, because they know our mentality. They just try to push us the edge. They already know we're weak. But they say, okay, let's go ahead and give them all this social media and go ahead and push them over the edge so we can really take over. And that's really the mindset of a lot of them. They can see the weakness, because we were able to buy things because of the weakness of other countries. Louisiana Purchase, we were able to buy for $12 an acre or something because those countries were weak and they were in no position. Thing happening to us. So I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. Walaikum as-salam. And the most important point that we really wanted to make today is that the technology is changing. Artificial intelligence is going to have a big impact. It's going to have a major impact on the future and the way that our children and grandchildren actually participate. The machinery, the phones, the computers, the new computers that will be coming out, you know, the old ones are internet accessible, but the new computers that will be coming out is going to be full of artificial intelligence. You're going to be able to do, and that's why the prices of them are going to be going up too. Not only as far as computers, but as far as the phones are concerned too, because there's going to be a lot of artificial intelligence that's actually going to be put on our phones too. So we should keep these things in consideration, not to be scary, but to just to know that, as we have been saying on living the upload life and making an understanding about the changes in technology, that technology is again changing, and this is a major change that's actually going on that's going to have a big effect on our future. So so just recognize where we've come from, you know, as far as Bell telephone system, the Alexander Graham Bell, the telegraph system, you know, and all of that, you know, to the radio waves and all the rest of these things. And here it is now. We're into the age of artificial intelligence. I thank you so very much, brothers and sisters. Don't forget, A New Day for Al-Islam Community Radio at 10 o'clock. Let's see, Sister Martha, anything else that you'd like to say?
Yes. Yes, and at 1 p.m., we don't want to miss, after we go to A New Day for Al-Islam, immediately after the Adhan is called, and we say it makes a lot, and we come right back to AM360 for MAP 5, Muslim American Power 5, with Fleming, Cheryl Sadduth, and Amatullah Sabri. And that's from 1 to 3. And then we go to 5 p.m. for Optimal Health, and that's with Abdul Shaheed, from 5 to 7 p.m. And then 7 to 8 p.m. is Maya Ala Kulehel with Imam Abdul Aziz of Bronx, New York. Please stay connected. Thank you, William. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you, Sister Martha. May Allah continue to bless us. We pray that, you know, we was able to bring some good information to you. Don't forget, tomorrow we will be doing the stories of the lives of the prophets. So make sure to tune in then, and we'll continue our conversation. So we're going to go out with this TSA. Assalamualaikum.
Assalamualaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Thank you.